state bureaucracy and so on. And so if you think about it, that if you actually did have a government that tried to implement a serious climate justice agenda, it would face tremendous opposition from, you know, the business class and international investors in, you know, most likely. And they would attempt to punish that government to try to get it to change its course. I refer in the book at one point to a series that I saw on Netflix called Occupied, which is a drama, you know, fiction, in which the Norwegian government tries to halt fossil fuel production. And then the states that, you know, countries that are reliant on Norwegian oil and gas then organize military and political intervention to stop it from doing that. And that's a, you know, it's not an unrealistic scenario. So this is why in that situation, because you have all these unelected wielders of power, the governments alone will just buckle faced with that kind of opposition. And so that's where you need to have mass social movements of ordinary people in very large numbers that would, you know, in that kind of situation, be taking action to demand the government not back down and to demand that, you know, people's democratic choice for climate justice be respected.
Oh, I think that's about it for David, eh? We're going to close off.
Yeah, David's got a lot to say, and he's got a lot of things that we need to discuss more in depth, and he certainly was a very good guest.
Well, thank you, David, to bring out the social aspect. Definitely Dr. Renewable looks at all ways to address climate change by increasing towards a benchmark of 100% renewable, 100% sustainability, using various tools. And, of course, humans are a big part of the equation. And your book certainly sheds light on it. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program were those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
Looking for affordable t-shirts, hoodies, or other items for your group? Look no further than printedshirts.ca. From water bottles to travel mugs to backpacks, and from t-shirts to hoodies to team uniforms, printedshirts.ca has been meeting the needs of U of M student groups, clubs, and other organizations for over 20 years. Printedshirts.ca is Winnipeg's number one source for branded merch, whether it's just a dozen printed t-shirts or a large order of embroidered faculty hoodies. Their friendly and helpful staff consistently delivers quality product hassle-free, quickly, and at a great price. Visit printedshirts.ca to see the entire selection of products or stop by their showroom at 464 Hargrave Street in the Exchange for an in-person consultation about how printedshirts.ca can help out you and your group.
As a part of their ongoing fall concert series, the Winnipeg Folk Festival is pleased to welcome the dynamic duo of Danny Michelle and Steve Poltz to the West End Cultural Center for one night only on Tuesday, November 19th. After meeting at a folk festival nearly a dozen years ago, Danny and Steve are the best of pals now and are happily reuniting for a captivating performance that promises to blend their distinctive songs and stories into an unforgettable experience. Concert goers are sure to be treated to an evening filled with playful energy, musical mischief, and spontaneous collaborations. Tickets for this entertaining night of music start at only $35 plus fees, available now through Ticketmaster. Don't miss Danny Michelle and Steve Poltz at the West End on Tuesday, November 19th, proudly supported by UMFM 101.5.
The views expressed in the following program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of this station.
Good day, and welcome to this week's edition of Not Necessarily the Automobile on 101.5 UMFM. I'm your host, Adam Johnston, for Thursday, November 7th, 2024. In this week's edition, Food Drive, we take a look at the recent report by Food Banks Canada and how demand for Canadian food banks is on the rise, and how the role of good public and active transportation can help people connect to the necessity of food in your neighborhoods. Plus, we take a look at the news and perhaps some upcoming events. That is all upcoming on this week's edition of Not Necessarily the Automobile here on 101.5 UMFM. And thanks again for joining us this week here on Not Necessarily the Automobile on 101.5 UMFM. Again, I'm your host, Adam Johnson, as we are just wrapping up another week here, and we are heading into the Remembrance Day long weekend. And on behalf of myself here and the show, I would like to offer a moment of reflection and remembrance for those veterans who served in World War I, World War II, the Korean War, and in the duty of Afghanistan. We really want to thank you for your service, and I hope that the lessons that we've learned from these wars can guide us through these turbulent times in our world and work toward a long, hard peace process everywhere so everyone can know what peace is like in every part of our world today. So I hope if you can, either virtually or physically, try to get out to a Remembrance Day service near you if you can. And if not, please definitely take a moment of silence for yourself to remember those who fought in all the wars I mentioned. And also as well, tomorrow on November 8th is Veterans Day to reflect on the veterans of Indigenous background here in Canada, and as well those who served in all those wars and came back home, all the Indigenous people that did serve in the wars. It's also a time to reflect on behalf of them as well. So please definitely take some time out to remember them who served for our country, even though our country didn't give back the respect that they certainly deserve. So again, do that as well on tomorrow on November 8th. So, but let's dig deep right into this week's episode, shall we? Now, a recent report discussed that demand for a certain product is on the rise. Now, in normal terms, this would be considered a good thing for any organization. However, in the world of food banks, this is not necessarily a great idea. Now, according to a recent report from Food Banks Canada, usage across the nation increased 6% versus the year prior in 2023, and 90% since 2019, the year before the pandemic. There were 2 million visitors to Canadian food banks by March of 2024, the highest ever recorded in history. In Manitoba, the numbers are, well, quite scary, to be honest. Now, according to a CBC News article, food bank usage since the COVID-19 pandemic started has spiked by 122% and a 30% increase since March of 2023, said Harvest Manitoba's Vince Barletta. As that demand has increased, so too that food can run out. The report also noted that 30% of food banks were running out of food before seeing the demand. Meanwhile, 56% of Canadian food banks were giving out less food than the prior to avoid running out of food. Barletta also mentioned to CBC, housing and food inflation have helped to accelerate the skyrocketing demand in food banks. He also suggested that the latest Food Banks Canada report points to the need for food banks organizations to collaborate with governments on discussing, quote, about poverty and food security, including developing a food security strategy here in Manitoba, unquote. This all leads to some questions about food security and how we get our food, who produces our food as well. After all, many of the challenges with our current food system is grocery chains versus locally owned stores. A few generations ago, it was quite easy to go a couple of blocks to a local grocer, get your weekly groceries. A few generations ago, it was quite easy for the local co-op to deliver your milk on a weekly basis. However, in recent years, We have seen the identity of the local grocer decay. Larger companies, including Walmart, Superstore, would build their mammoth stores in largely suburban areas, charge lower prices while undercutting producers. At the same time, wages would remain stagnant for the general population. Thus, as wages remain flat, many people, in order to find a bargain, would go to places like Walmart and Superstore. As this was occurring, many local grocers began to decline. In Winnipeg, for example, many places like IGA, some aspects, some food fairs, have fallen by the wayside. Add the pandemic prices skyrocketing as wages continue to fall behind, real purchasing power also declines. More local grocers have closed, including Balkans in Elmwood recently. When local grocers close, these create more and more food deserts. So what are food deserts, you ask? Now, according to Wikipedia, a food desert is, quote, a food desert is an area that has limited access to food that is plentiful, affordable, or nutritious. In contrast, an area with greater access to supermarkets and vegetable shops with fresh foods may be called a food oasis, unquote. The definition is in line with the June 2021 U.S. Congressional Research Briefing paper in Focus, which suggests that food deserts are referred to as an area, quote, with limited access to affordable and nutritious food, particularly in an area composed of predominantly lower-income neighborhoods and communities, unquote. So, how do things like food deserts occur? Well, one New Humanity website had this to say about how this happens. Quote, food deserts are the result from a lack of proper access to and distribution of healthy food. The major root causes for these issues are poverty and systematic inequality. A USDA study on the characteristics and influential factors of food deserts found the following. Areas with higher levels of poverty are more likely to be food deserts in all but very dense urban neighborhood areas. The higher the percentage of minority population, the more likely the area is to be a food desert. A 2014 study on food store availability in the U.S. came to similar conclusions. Researchers found that supermarket availability decreased as poverty increased, and that at equal level of poverty, black census tracts had the fewest supermarkets, while white tracts had the most, and integrated tracts were intermediate, unquote. Again, this piece is from the website, onenewhumanity.org, definitely worth checking out. Quote, these findings highlight the impact of systematic inequality on the nation's food system. Racial and income inequality often create obstacles for food access from transportation to affordability, unquote. And again, that is from the website, onenewhumanity.org, definitely worth checking out. Now note that the key things mentioned are areas with higher poverty, areas where there is a higher minority population, and are more likely to be a food desert. Less supermarkets equals more poverty in those areas. So often, as was mentioned, have a higher African American population, and like I said, that means less supermarkets, while areas with higher amount of Caucasians seem to have more supermarkets. In a 2017 study done by Joyce Slater, Stefan Koop-Epp, Megan Jakilazek, and Chris Green noted these things as well. Quote, the majority of food desert neighborhoods were concentrated in the downtown area of Winnipeg. However, there were several affected neighborhoods in the outer suburbs. Unquote. quote as well. Simple and cost-effective methods using income, location of food stores, population counts, and the ground verification can defensively identify the location and size of urban food deserts and can be used for ongoing surveillance, unquote. Now, one thing I think we can also say that impacts how people get their food is transportation and how we get around. Now, not everyone has a car, nor can everyone can afford a car here in Winnipeg, despite that most Winnipeggers' preference of getting around probably is by car, which really has impacted the design of the city, but how we get our food. There are people that take the bus and bike and walk. They just simply cannot afford a car, nor do some even want the hassle of a car, you know, with all the maintenance and getting a driver's license, getting auto pack, and all that lovely fun stuff when getting a car. Now, this is reflected in last year's Harvest Manitoba survey of users, and the report is called Harvest Voices, and the new one should be out probably in the next month or so, or in the near future. According to the 2023 edition, it's clear those using Harvest have limited transportation options. 65% prefer public transit. 59% walk, 22% use automobile, and 9% use a bicycle. Hence, most respondents use some form of non-private automobile use to access Harvest. Cost of a private automobile and a driver's license hinders those who need to access Harvest services the most. And while Winnipeg Transit might be less costly than overall private automobile use, it's not getting any cheaper either. You know, currently the average cash bus fare for adults is $3.25, and that is expected to increase to $3.45 in 2026. We are literally entering Toronto transit usage territory when it comes to bus fares in the city. That is not good for folks who use Winnipeg Transit and need it the most. I'll get back onto this shortly on what we need to do. But to go briefly back to food deserts and how to solve that problem, some community groups are doing a good job with this. Like, for example, the Chalmers Renewal Corporation, which has a program in helping get food to people within the area, does a very good job of that. There are many neighborhood gardens which are very good. The MMF has a food garden so Métis citizens can get fresh vegetables, which is something I should do next summer. Seriously, I really should. But we need to get local grocers in place like the downtown, Elmwood, West End, and the North End. More local farmers markets were necessary. Promising balancing price and quality would help. Perhaps certain tax incentives, procurement procedures would help in getting a renewal of local grocery stores to reduce the strain of no grocery stores here in the city of Winnipeg. Now, as part of reducing the food island problem here in Winnipeg, we need to improve access to transportation. This includes addressing the systematic racial barriers baked into our current transportation system. Yes, there are some good things that we have happening or are happening. The WinPass program. Now, what that program is, it is a program that started in 2019 that helps to support low-income earners here in the city. And that's been fairly successful. You can look it up on Transit's website if you want more information about that. Our transit system is changing how they do service starting in June, with more service and better bus routes. You can go to the website on that as well, or you can go to an episode I did about this in February here on Not Necessarily the Automobile. However, a lot more work needs to be done. Encouraging your city council to improve funding for transit so we can lower bus fares, so that we can reduce adult cash fares from currently $3.25 to maybe $2 per ride, and eventually one would be great. Perhaps maybe we should work towards having bus fares for under 18, zero, and same thing with seniors. Let's also work towards our current council finishing and completing the active transportation network for a fraction of what it would cost to expand the Chief Peguis Trail and Kennison Boulevard expansions. Heck, you know, you could use some of that money from both projects to build out better bus routes and lower bus fares, like I said. And if your city councilors continue to ignore this, you know there's always 2 years from now in 2026 with the civic election. Maybe we'll get some good candidates. Who knows? We must encourage the provincial government to relook at making not only what is required to improve small businesses to accelerate increasing local grocers, as I mentioned, work as well with food banks to have a long-term plan for climate resiliency within food security, but also phase out the gas tax holiday, which a portion of it can fund our public transportation system, which can help lower bus fares, like I said, as well as finance active transportation projects that can encourage more cycling in the city of Winnipeg. And that would be especially helpful considering that nearly 80% or around there prefer the car as their main mode of transportation, and yet our transportation plans want that reduced dramatically, while bus travel they want to increase, as well as cycling. So you might as well look at where that gas tax holiday money has been gone to and stop that at the end of this year and put that money maybe towards that. But hey, I'm just a guy that hosts a show on 101.5 UMFM, so I don't have a lot of sway in that. But at the end of the day, if we're going to address this major issue of food insecurity, the climate crisis, as well as income inequalities, where because of that people can't afford food, we have to look at how we get around. And that, at the end of the day, is probably one reason why we have a big issue with the high demand in food bank usage. If we only can look at reducing the income inequality and properly use our resources at every level. I don't blame Harvest for the concerns they have, and they certainly should be concerned about the high demand in food bank usage. After all, if you're a food bank, you don't want your demand to go up. You want it to go down. You want one day not to be there in the hopes that everyone has plenty of food. But at the end of the day, if we are going to look at reducing the challenges and the barriers to food access, we need to look at our transportation system. And we have to address that the poorest of the poor, or those who just have perhaps maybe mental health issues, just don't want to drive a car, can't afford a car. And maybe that's where we really need to address the inequalities of our transportation system regarding that, to ensure that maybe one day we'll all have full stomachs instead of empty stomachs for some. And we'll take a short musical break here, but we'll be back here on Not Necessarily Automobile here on 101.5 UMFM. And when we come back, we will discuss some news and, if we have time, talk about some events. So stay tuned. And welcome back here to Not Necessarily the Automobile here on 101.5 UMFM. Again, I'm your host, Adam Johnson. And thank you very much for tuning in this Thursday, November 7th, 2024 here. And again, really appreciate you taking time on your Thursday morning to listen to community radio. And we really value that as we do try our best here to provide a good high quality service here with Not Necessarily the Automobile here on 101.5 UMFM. After the show, please stay tuned for Democracy Now! Featuring Amy Goodman. Again, great show, good commentator. Like I said, every Thursday, 11:30, come for your news on active and public transportation analysis. And then afterwards, stay for news about democracy featuring Goodman. And that is Democracy Now! At 12 noon on 101.5 UMFM. Please stay tuned for that. And that show is on every weekday, Monday to Friday, I believe, from starting at 12 noon. So always come in for that show at 12 noon, Democracy Now! And we're going to get into some news this week here on the show. And we are going to start with another story about, don't want to bring in this, but it looks like we have another story about another pedestrian being hit by a vehicle here in the city of Winnipeg. Now, this occurred on Monday evening, November 4th, 2024. Now, this happened in close to my area here, around Killam Place Mall in Transcona, Elmwood area. According to CBC News here, they have a story and it's entitled "Pedestrian Hit by Vehicle Near Winnipeg's Killam Place Mall Monday Evening." And like I said, according to CBC News here, I'll read the whole story from the website and you can go to it afterwards. It goes, quote, "A pedestrian is in hospital after he was hit by a vehicle Monday evening near Killam Place Mall in Winnipeg. Police received a report about it, the collision at Regent Avenue West at Staypond Road at 6:45 p.m. A man in his 30s was taken to the hospital in unstable condition, police said in a news release. The driver stayed at the scene and spoke with police officers. Investigators with the traffic division have not made any charges and continue to investigate. Police ask anyone who may have witnessed the collision or who may have dash camera footage to call the traffic division at 204-986-7085 or anonymously contact Crime Stoppers at 204-786-TIPS or winnipegcrimestoppers.org, unquote. Again, I don't know what to say. It just seems like every week or every few weeks I'm reading these stories. I know for like the longest time there must have been one or two stories every week about a pedestrian being severely hurt, killed, cyclist being killed, hurt, and it's just extremely frustrating. And I actually wrote about this in the Manitoba a few weeks ago about the summer of discontent, about the issues regarding, you know, Rob Jenner being killed, the cyclist near on Wellington, as well as a few Indigenous pedestrians who were also killed, as well as a cyclist who was also injured around Wellington, and just how that is all intertwined to not only our poor transportation system, but our transportation system that has long systematic racism concerns. Now, again, while this story may not tie in with what happened this summer, it certainly does have those characteristics of just the same issues that our transportation system in Winnipeg, but I'd say most of North America, is just not designed for pedestrians and favors cars. This is why we have this issue. And we'll continue to remain so unless we do something about it. I mean, we can try contacting our city councilor, but that just doesn't seem to work. And polls recognize that many people are getting frustrated with their city council. They don't believe that they're going to be able to solve issues like crime and stuff and safety. And I would consider this as a safety issue. We need to do a better job of this, you know? And again, I don't know what to say, man. I really don't. When I read these stories, it just, it's frustrating that we, I talk about these, but if there's one thing I wish that, you know, media outlets, when they do report this, is that they do a better job of it. And please, like, in your, you know, any media outlet like CBC, Winnipeg Free Press, CTV News, whatever, please do not mention the driver stayed at the scene and spoke with police officers. That information is redundant to us. So please, can you not do that? If you've listened to my show, I had someone from Vision Zero Vancouver who did a media guide about that. I can certainly guide you to that if you need that. So please, don't be afraid to reach out to me. It's time that we report better on these issues in the media as well. So anyway, that's this week's episode of Not Necessarily the Automobile here at 101.5 UMFM. I've run out of time, but again, you can always reach us on our Twitter page at NNTAONUMFM. You can listen to us on our archives at www.umfm. And you can also email us at notnecessarilytheautomobile@gmail.com. Again, I'm your host, Adam Johnston. Thank you very much for listening. Have a wonderful week. And please stay tuned next for Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! At 12 noon on 101.5 UMFM.
I'm sick, baby. I'm sick. Come on, baby. Daddy needs his feel-good juice. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the stuff. That's what Daddy needs. Yeah. See what it is we're all community. And when you're community and when love enters into it,
just give me any rock!
UMFM 101.5, broadcasting 1,200 watts from the University of Manitoba, giving Winnipeg and the surrounding community the good stuff since 1998.
The opinions expressed in the following program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
This is Democracy Now!
Only when it is dark enough can you see.